process. We like to do this every year, and it's a little bit more relaxed environment. First, going through just a little bit of an orientation with the council. There are certain rules these folks have to adhere to. We like to remind them of those things and training opportunities for ethics and things like that. If you haven't heard this, you might learn a little bit this morning. I see Graham looking at me kind of sideways. I'm not sure we did this back in the day, but it's something we've been adamant about.
We didn't have ethics.
Yeah, for all of our elected officials and
for yourself.
So we'd say the majority of our staff adhere to the same rules. So we'll be talking about that kicking off today. We'll also be talking about council priorities. This is another exercise we started about 4 years ago. And this is an opportunity for each individual council member to reveal and openly discuss their individual community priorities. These are a little bit more broad typically, although they can be a little bit more project specific. So getting all of those down on paper today so that we can all see them and discuss them, and that forms the basis for the overall council priorities going into the budget process. We have a lot to talk about in terms of priorities. We'll also talk a little bit about this strategic plan that we've been talking about for a number of years. It's really just an organizational document. I'll explain the benefits of this to both the council, staff, and the public coming up here. It's something we're going to do regardless if the council is involved or not. We're already quite a ways down the road with the organizational side of it. So we'll talk about that. And then we will end with a discussion and possible action on the leaf and brush pickup item. This item was tabled previously by the previous council until the first budget meeting this year, which today is that first official budget meeting. So we've added that to the agenda per the request of the mayor, and that item also being tabled. Thanks for reminding us. So that's the agenda. And again, this is meant to be a little bit more relaxed. I would say if you can't hear that well in the back, I see a number of folks on the back row. If you want to catch every word, you might consider moving to the very front. We have microphones that are picking up and recording everything that we're saying. But if you can't hear, please move just a little bit closer. With that, we would like to kick off the presentation with Letty and the orientation. Can I make a request before we jump into that? So we don't have those audio visual. We can't see that angle very well. Can we move? Can we?
We can adjust that. There you go.
As long as you can turn one up.
Yeah, turn one of them.
Yeah.
But not
well, that's right. You guys over there can't see.
There you go.
Is that okay over there?
Is that better?
Yeah.
Is that
okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. We're trying to reduce the amount of paper that we're picking out to everyone.
I appreciate the diminished glare as well.
So we're going to start with the council orientation, and there's some items listed in your packet that we're going to go over as far as the agenda. So the first thing is the city charter. As you know, our form of government is a home rule city. What does that mean? That means that you as council members can adopt ordinances that will be implemented and put into place. Other cities that are not home rule don't have that authority. You have zoning powers, you have other things that are set up in state code that allow you to do things that other cities do not or are not able to because they're type A or B. We're going to go ahead and move on to enacting legislation. That's your ordinances that you adopt, adopting your budgets, determine policies for the city, employ your city manager, and that's a very important one. And then all powers of the city are exercised in the manner that are prescribed in your city charter. I do have a copy of it this morning in case anyone wants to reference our city charter. We're going to go on to city council. So number, selection, and term, as you know, your council terms are for First of all, they're elected at large. And what does that mean? That means everyone's on the same ballot and everyone gets to vote for each and every one of you. The only difference is here in Fredericksburg, we are also, you're also voted in by plurality. And that means that the person that receives the highest number of votes wins. In other cities where they have different terms, they have to have 50 plus one vote, 50% plus one vote in order to be able to be elected. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Your terms are 2-year terms, and you may be elected to an unlimited number of terms, but no more than 4 consecutive terms in the same office. And I know thereafter, if you've exceeded that, you can run in a different office. For example, if you're a council member, after that, you can run for mayor or vice versa. Next slide, we're going to talk about the So the qualifications to run are you must be at least 18 years of age, you must be a citizen of the United States, you must be a qualified voter, and you must have resided in the city of Fredericksburg at least 1 year prior to filing your application. And in addition to that, you must have resided in the state of Texas continuously for at least 1 year. You shall, in our charter, it reads that you shall not be indebted to the city. In addition to that, if a city council member fails to maintain these qualifications, the city council must declare a vacancy and fill that vacancy. In addition to that, we have the absence of 3 or more consecutive regular meetings without a valid excuse declares that there is a vacancy in that position. And that's in our charter as well. Your compensation is also set by the city charter, section 3.04. The mayor receives $1,000 a month, while the council members receive $700 a month. Additionally, you are reimbursed for any meetings or training that you may have to take. The mayor pro tem is elected at the first meeting after each election, and we just elected, or you elected, I should say, Bobby Watson to be your mayor pro tem. The emergency power of the mayor. In a time of danger or emergency, the mayor may, with the consent of the council, take command of the police department and govern the city by proclamation and maintain order and enforce all laws. I don't know about that. Chief, I don't know if you want to hand over your gun to the mayor in case that occurs, but it is in the city charter. Vacancies. When a vacancy occurs, the remaining members of the council shall have within 30 days appoint a qualified person to fill that vacancy until the next city election. Meetings of the council are set by also charter, and you must meet regularly at least 1 meeting per month. There's rules of procedure that you have adopted that I put out on your table in front of you. If you look through that very quickly, you can see that last year there were no changes. But the year before that, when I came in June, we did make quite a few changes to this document. Feel free to look through it and let me know if there are any changes you'd like to see made. If so, let me know. And what we can do is we can place this on one of our next city council agendas so that we can adopt those changes.
But it's back to the city charter for a moment. Having Bobby and I were on the review committee for that. I think it's a 5-year time span where we update or upgrade that, if you will.
Yes.
If the council finds a reason that we'd like to look at that sooner, can we do that within, I think it was 3 years before we did it.
Okay, so the way it works, because it's in the charter in that manner, that's the time frame that you would have to wait. But state law trumps that. And state law reads that if you'd like to have a change to the city charter, you have to wait 2 years after your last city charter amendment. And that was in May 4th, 2024. So you'd have to wait 2 years after that date in order to have another charter amendment election.
So we're looking at next May. For the first.
We've already passed.
24, we've already passed.
So we could do it if the council found a reason to do that.
Right.
Talking about during a regular election to.
Oh, yeah.
Charter, right.
Oh, that, yeah, right. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Rules of procedure, as I mentioned, they're in front of you. Take a look at them at your leisure and let me know if there's any changes that need to be made. Yes, sir.
And I would say regarding the rules of procedure, the changes that we've typically made the last decade or so have to do with the order of business on agendas. The last amendment that we made under Mayor Hoover was regarding making comments on items not on the agenda. We removed that from the agenda. But just to give you an idea, if there is a little bit different order you would like to take in the agenda, reordering the agenda in terms of any public comment, council comment, or otherwise, take a look at all of this. We can discuss this a little bit further. We can discuss it today if you would like. But that's the main section, the rules of procedure that we've typically amended.
And we'll cover a little bit more of that in the Open Meetings Act, which is in here as well. Article 10 talks about the municipal finance. It talks about specifically the enterprise fund usage and that the city shall not use proceeds or reserves from an enterprise fund, except for the expenditure within the purpose of that particular fund. And I think y'all are aware of that. Moving on, amending the charter, and we just talked about this. So the charter can propose, first of all, there's two ways to amend the charter. The council can propose changes or amendments to the charter, or you can have and appoint a committee, a charter amendment committee, that will look through the entire charter and bring forth recommended changes to you that they see or feel fit to be changed. You as a council can adopt those or not, or change them up. So those are the two ways that you can actually have a charter amendment election. And as I mentioned, if you go on to the next slide, in our charter, it does talk about the five-year interval to review the charter. And but as I mentioned also, the state law reads that it's every 2 years. So even though that's in conflict, we would go with what state law reads and how it reads. The next slide, we'll talk about potential conflicts of interest. And these are evaluated on a case-by-case basis, but you as a council member and mayor know what specific items relate to your particular personal interest. I don't know that. So it's up to you as a council member to disclose that. And we have the form. So at every meeting, I have the forms available if you would like to recuse yourself. So you would just fill out the form. And what I suggest you do is, so that there is no way that anyone can say you partook in that discussion, I would ask that you exit during that particular item's discussion. And then once the vote has been taken, come back into the meeting, and then you'll be at the next item. And that way there's no one that can say you partook in any of that discussion or swayed the vote one way or the other.
So to be clear, you're saying exit the room?
Exit the room into the executive session
okay.
room
okay. Mm-hmm.
during the discussion and vote. That affidavit is filed with me, and we do maintain it for the life of your term. In addition to that, there is another form that's called the CIS form that I will have with me at each meeting. That particular item is a state form, not a local form. And what happens with the CIS form, once you complete that, we post it by law on the website. So we are required to place it on the website. And that stays up until your term, of course, has come and gone. Next slide. So that covers your recusals, limitations on appearing before a council, city boards, commissions to represent any personal interest. You know, you must identify yourself as council member or the mayor. That way you've disclosed that if you do have to go before any board for any personal interest. And there is a limitation on accepting gifts. Next slide. And now we're back to the rules of procedure that I mentioned that are before you at your table. These are all the items that are addressed under rules of procedure. It starts with your Open Meetings Act, your executive sessions, work sessions, forums, attendance, chair of the council, which is the mayor, is also known as the presiding officer, and the agenda. So I wanted to touch real briefly on the Open Public Meetings Act, and that's a training that you are required by law, state law, to take after you've been elected to your position. You have 90 days from the day that you were elected to fulfill that requirement. I have checked, and we have all your certificates on file. You're only required to take that training once during any term that you have served on council. So there's no need to take another one unless you would like to view the video again. And that's certainly up to you. I can send you the link, and you're welcome to view that video and turn in your newest certificate at that point. Go on to the next slide.
I'll take it from here, Letty.
Okay.
I just wanted to give a brief update for you guys on our communication policy. So the reason we have a communications policy: ensure accurate, timely, and transparent communication. And this reflects our commitment to be transparent and open form of government. You know, we've said in the past, you guys are experts in your field. You're experts on everything going on in the city. So if a media member reaches out to you, feel free to respond to that. We just ask that you let me and Clinton know that y'all have had that interaction with the media in case we need to make any adjustments on what we're doing on our end. As the public information officer, I serve as the official spokesperson. So if you don't feel comfortable making those comments to the media, feel free to push them my way. That's what I'm here for. I support the council with media relations expertise and messaging. And I can review anything y'all need to put out, whether that's social media, a letter, or any form of communication. Wanted to touch briefly on what we don't share: medical records, personnel files, legal opinions, or law enforcement records. And then a couple points on our website and social media. We have these official platforms to promote transparency. So in all cases, we try to avoid controversial or speculative content, and we do not share confidential city information. We do have a branding and logo standards guide. If y'all need that, feel free to reach out and I can share it with you. We updated our logo when I started about 2.5 years ago, just cleaned it up a little bit, very similar logo, but we're still in the process of making sure that logo is in all the right places. So consistency is key there. And as always, I'm happy to answer any questions or provide any help you need when it comes to dealing with the media or the public.
I wanted to add, here we go. Open Meetings Act, I think I go back to that slide. So as you're aware, all our meetings are public, and they are posted nowadays, they're posted 3 days prior to the date of the meeting. So that law changed from 72 hours. Next slide. And a quorum is always necessary in order to conduct a meeting.
Is it 3 regular days or 3 business days?
3 business days. Okay. And so these are some of the items that you can go into closed session. So it's not just a matter of saying, oh, let's just go into an executive session. You have to abide by one of these items that is up there on the screen in order to be behind closed doors. Next slide. So I talked a little bit about the Open Meetings Act and the training that's necessary. There's also a PIA, Public Information Act, and there's a training for that as well. You, as council members, are not required to attend that, but if you're interested, I can send you the link so you can also see that training and submit that certificate. In addition to that, there is another training now required by all of you, as well as all of us, and it's the new cybersecurity training that you should have received an email on from Arctic Wolf. If you did not, please let us know, and that we'll get that link out to you. Aaron's office is working with us to make sure you as council members and all board members that are appointed are required to take that training and have it on file as far as the certificate.
That's a 10-minute training?
No, it's not 10 minutes. It's actually 40.
Okay.
Yeah. I know, that's a long
time. Dr. Anderson shaking his head.
Next slide. So the Open Meetings Act also provides for folks to be able to come to the meeting and speak on items on the agenda, either at the beginning of the meeting or when the item is being considered. So as Clinton mentioned a little bit earlier, that is what's in the law right now. Now, the council may adopt reasonable rules concerning the public's right to speak, including a reasonable time limitation, which we happen to have, and that happens to be 3 minutes. Most governmental entities, just so you know, are at 3 minutes. I don't know of one that's longer than that. The governmental body shall not deliberate on any item that is not on the agenda. So if someone comes and brings forth an item that is not on the agenda, there's no way that you can have a discussion on that item because it's not posted. Next slide. Okay, there we go. Open Meetings Act. These are the requirements. We post the city website, on our city website, the agenda 3 days prior, and that is business days. Thank you, Bobby. Emergency meetings, if we have to have one for any emergency, such as a tornado or a hurricane of that nature, we only have to satisfy a 1 hour requirement before we'll have that meeting. The next slide. So some of the things that are public, and this is through our Public Information Act, and this is a state act. Some of the things that you may want to keep on the forefront that are available to the public are photographs that you may have, audio, video recordings, maps, drawings, information on any type of medium. Also your emails, text messages, instant messages, internet postings, or other electronic communications. So be aware that anything that you post is public information for anyone that may request it. Now, they do have to request it through our system, and then we go ahead and we'll get with you and go through your items and phones. Some of the things that are not necessary to give out are if you sent an email to Clinton, said, hey, let's do lunch today, that's not something that that is necessary. But other things having to do with city business would be open.
Does that posting also apply to staff as well?
Yes, it does.
So that's an important issue. Mm-hmm. Just one of the things I'm going to respectfully ask is that we don't bring phones up here just for that reason. Just a comment.
And if you do have your phones, just make sure you silence them. Public Information Act requests, they must be in writing. And like I said, there is a system that we have where it requires the individual to complete an application type form. And they just fill that out and it comes directly through me. And then it gets sent to the appropriate department. For example, if it's a water, wastewater issue, that gets sent to Chris. If it's HR related, that gets sent to Tammy. We work with our departments to make sure we have the information that's being requested. Once it comes back to me, I ensure that anything that's PII, which is personal identifiable information, is redacted from those documents. So if we've got, they sent back your date of birth or things, a cell phone number, your email, all that is considered PII by state law. So we redact those items. But I will let you know, if ever there is an open records request on any of you, including our department directors, I typically will reach out to you and let you know. Next slide. So the role of the public information officer, that is Sean, and we he just mentioned to you that he does serve as the city spokesperson on emergency, any press releases, and then the open records are handled by our office. At this time, we'll go ahead and move on to the initiation of our budget.
Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you.
Any questions for Lenny about anything she covered in the presentation? If you need links to training, if you need any information, find it. Please contact Letty or Sean, and they can help you with that information. So moving into the budget side of the presentation today, I'm going to start with the exercise going through the community priorities, council community priorities exercise, and following up, talking a little bit about strategic plan, or comprehensive plan, how that relates to our comprehensive plan, our capital improvement plan, and other master plans that we have. So before we get into the council's priorities, I just want to provide you with a couple of lists of different projects and initiatives that have either been identified that we may be currently working on, maybe on the near horizon, maybe some of these we haven't made up any ground, but just to give you an idea, some of the past priorities, some of the initiatives that are currently on our overall list or underway, starting with community amenity and sidewalks and trails. When you look at our comprehensive plan, probably the number one priority, I'll talk on and off about the comprehensive plan a little bit today. And our idea and fear with the comprehensive plan is it's getting lost on the shelf. Although we are pursuing our unified development code, there are a lot of proposed activities in that comprehensive plan. There's a vision, there are strategic initiatives that I really want this council to be familiar with. So sidewalks and trails. Public restrooms, we've talked about the addition of public restrooms in various locations along Main Street, primarily other locations. That has been a priority. Little League ball fields, we have completed the soccer field side of our sports park near the airport on city-owned property. We have had a little bit of activity on the Little League side. Just recently, if you want to get into a little bit more of a discussion, we do have parks folks here that have been in conversations with those that are leading this effort. On the public works side, we've talked for the last decade about the eventual need for a new water reclamation facility. I've put this first. I want to keep this at the top of the list. Because as we're talking about long-term water supply study and alternatives moving forward, even the expanded use of our reclaimed water. And when I'm talking about reclaimed water, I'm talking about the treated effluent that comes out of our wastewater treatment plant. I think we need to be thinking about, honestly, be thinking about trying to pursue this project within the next 10 years or so. We're going to be likely reusing some of this reclaimed water as converting it to potable water is one of the options identified. New water supply well, again, we master planned this back in 2017. We had an opportunity that we did take advantage of. We had the support of the council. We will hopefully be finalizing agreements with a landowner to get that established. The construction of the project will then follow. Landfill transfer station, this is another one that is ongoing. Benefit of the public that might not know about this, I've listed it. It will transform the way we handle our refuse in Fredericksburg. Instead of burying it, we will collect it. It will leave the city of Fredericksburg, eventually be sorted through. A lot of that will be recycled. Transportation bond projects. This is another set of projects that came out of a master plan that we completed in 2017. There are four very specific. What are we calling them here? The midterm
roadway extension
projects. We have brought these to the council a number of different occasions, different councils over the last probably 5 or 6 years, and we haven't had a lot of traction. Recently, we've been talking a lot about the Frederick Road extension as it relates to a proposed development project. It's right next door here. I think that has brought these projects, you know, back to light, and we're getting around town now talking about a couple of these projects, trying to gauge the support of the community for our proposed East Moore Street extension and our South Cherry Street extension project. So we'll continue to do that through our town hall series. Again, trying to, you know, give the council an idea how much support we have for these projects. Moving on, future projects and opportunity, city-owned property. We hear a lot, or I've heard a lot during the recent election campaign, heard a lot about city-owned property, and we need to make plans and do something with some of the property that we own. And I agree with that. We have our Turner Hall property. I think there may be some opportunities for that Turner Hall property. Would love the opportunity to get this item in front of the council, maybe in another special meeting, and discuss specifically how we might develop that particular property. So again, I'll wait for the direction from council for this one. Our Ham property adjacent to the airport. This is the other half of the sports facility out there. Likely include the construction of Little League ball fields. Main Street specific initiatives. Every single year we talk about doing all of these things on Main Street. We will finally get started with one initiative a little bit later this year through the Native Plant Society, converting some hardscape to native planting areas. But whether you're talking about upgrading sidewalks, cleaning, plantings, creating interesting corridors along Main Street, there's been a lot of interest in the past in pursuing some of those initiatives. The expanded use of HOT, this is something that we continue to pursue for not only preservation, promotion of the arts, but also reimbursement to the city for the time, extra time that we spend, overtime that we spend in materials for special events and police department and emergency services. I know this is, again, something that you're all familiar with. We'll get into the actual numbers a little bit later in the budget process. And then finally, before we get into the exercise, ordinance amendments. These are some of the ordinance amendments that we have talked about on and off for the last several years. Again, just as a primer, Unified Development Code, that's something that we are moving forward with. Our water conservation ordinance, you heard Chris mention last time, last council meeting during his presentation, we will likely trim the first two stages out of that water conservation ordinance. Probably never go back there, although it does seem to be raining a little bit more. Fuel islands, the number of fuel islands, something we've discussed recently. And then finally, our sound ordinance, maybe taking another look at that. Additional items for discussion. we've discussed the council terms. We'll talk about this just a little bit when we're talking about strategic plan. From our perspective, and I've visited with a number of council members, others, with respect to our 2-year term, you know, we feel like you're just getting the knowledge you need to effectively understand and contribute to the budget process, for instance, at about 2 years. We feel the previous council even felt that a 3 or 4 year term might be a little bit more beneficial. We have discussed this. We would like to keep that at the surface as well, to see if we could, as a charter amendment, maybe go to a 3 or 4 year term. So if this is something you'd like to discuss today, we can get into that. If you want to wait, that's fine too.
Glenn,
yes,
on that particular item, if we, and I'm not sure if it's 3 or 4 year, but if we move to that, it also moves us into precincts.
There are a few changes that happen when you move to a 3 year term.
Okay.
There are a few cities that we can learn from those hard lessons of that. So, you know, again, this is something that we would, I think it makes sense. Something we'd like to discuss with you in a little bit more detail. We can pull legal into the discussion and talk about, you know, all of the changes that would take place if we did this.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things I heard was that we can potentially be out of sync with county commissioners because they're on a 4-year cycle. So our churn is much faster. So I like the idea of looking at that and considering that.
And I'll tell you, the last time we discussed this with the previous council, their thought was that a 3-year term made more sense than a 4-year term. We can pull out the notes from that discussion, you know, if you're interested to see how they arrived at that. I know that Bernie just went to a 3-year term recently. Logistically, it creates some challenges, but I don't think it would be difficult to overcome.
Did they go to precincts?
It's a single member district.
Okay.
And then finally, boards and commissions, terms and composition. I just wanted to throw this up here. There's been a lot of discussion about boards and commissions, their terms and composition. So if this council is interested in getting into that just a little bit more, continuing that conversation, we would be happy to provide you with all the background information in particular item. Okay, next. And this is where I would like to go through a specific exercise with each one of you with respect to your community priorities. The mayor, Todd, have both provided me with their list of priorities. If you could, starting with the mayor, and I would like to do this live. We have plenty of room on slides here. If you could go through your priorities, I'll start with you, Mayor, and then I'll go clockwise around the table, starting with Todd next. If you could just let us know what your priorities are, we'll get those up on the screen.
Okay, well, first of all, there's a lot of things you covered, which I would support, but to try to keep this condensed into 3 to 4 is the way I kind of look at things. But I talked about this when I ran, is getting the third well field up and running in 24 to 36 months. So I'm usually very targeted in terms of date, time, type of thing. So I'd like to have that third well field up and operational no later than May 2029, which is 36 months, sooner if at all possible. So that's priority number one for me. The second one is, I've spent a lot of time having conversations with boards and commissions since being elected, and also our residents as well. I would like to have us review implementing a conditional use permit for the historic district in Fredericksburg. This will provide planning and zoning along with city council an ability to review any business that is coming into that area. And I'm getting this from planning and zoning folks. I've had the conversation where sometimes a building will put up brown paper and they don't know what that business is until that brown paper comes down. So I think for us to be good stewards of one of the most important assets that we have, which is our historic district, I would like to propose if we take a look at that. So that's number two for me. Number three, we've talked about this quite a while, and I want to stop talking about it, and I want to do it. I respectfully say that our residents and tourists should pay for the city services that they enjoy when we're here. If we look at the call volumes, you can see the call volumes spike on the weekends. It's pretty intuitive why that's taking place. So I would like to work with the CVB and Hotel Texas Lodging and Texas Hotel and Lodging Association and applicable state authorities to codify and put into place an ability for us to use an amount of our HOT funds into our city budget so we can predict and depend upon that budget year over year. So I'd like to work with our stakeholders on that. Number four is more of an administrative one, but coming off of council, I thought, I'll point the finger at myself. I didn't document as well the procedure that we had in handling HOT funds. In the past, I had documented what the county had done, what the city had done previously, with what the ask of the city is currently, and then leveraging some expertise from the CVB is how many folks attended, and then that gave us a number that we could say not to exceed HOT, and then we would apply the same measuring stick to every single applicant coming before council. So I'll take ownership of that, but I'd like to see us fully document that for future council purposes. So those are my four.
Thank you. Caught up. John, ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to start with low-hanging fruit because I think we can accomplish this, and I think it's going to be fantastic. First priority, we need to re-engage with community management. They came here and they have a lot of had a lot of excitement about wanting to establish something in our community. So I think next week, someone needs to get in touch with them. Tell them we're ready.
Have they been reaching out to you?
No. They reached out to Tony, myself, Cheryl. I think because we were the only ones that had business cards.
Okay.
They did. Right. They reached out right after.
They reached out to Gerald. He forwarded to me. I have not reached out to them yet. Right. Can I be clear on that real quick? It's to have a conversation. It's
sure.
Not to have a casino or anything. No. I don't want people getting upset about that
again. I think I felt like when we left the meeting that we as council would discuss forming some kind of committee that would then re-engage with them to have less discussions. Number two, which was on Clinton's slide, Turner Hall. It may be a slim budget year, but we could at least start the conversation, re-engage Mustard Architects, figure out what we want to do with it, and have some plans ready whenever we want to pull the trigger on whatever idea we have. Also on Clinton's slide, mobility, transportation, whether that's bonds for roads, sidewalks, trails. Number four, and maybe this is part of the UDC, I don't know, conversation we can have with Cliff. We currently don't require irrigators to have a license or registration. We don't have any real clear rules around how irrigators can do their work, should do their work, having their work inspected. And then finally, following up on the mayor, the exact same thing, HOT. Number one, the procedure. Council working with CVB. Number two, engaging with Scott Joslow, talking about reimbursing PDB fire. That's it. That's five.
Thank you, sir.
He said three to five.
As many as you have.
I got 12.
Last year I had 9.
Okay. Yeah, we had to create 2 slides for you last year. That's fine.
First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for accommodating my schedule and moving the date to today. I appreciate that very much. My priorities are very similar to last year. City infrastructure is the first one. Maintain existing infrastructure at high level. Continue improvements, including the new water well and infrastructure transfer station. And our waste lines, our water lines, continue making improvements to those throughout the city to replace aging infrastructure. Second one is Main Street initiatives. Main Street is the crown jewel of our town. And I feel like the city, we've tried, but we really haven't done as much as we can to maintain it and to showcase Main Street. I mean, if Fredericksburg without Main Street would be another small town. So I just feel like Main Street's a big deal. Sidewalk improvements. We did buy some new trash cans, but on weekends and events, either we need to schedule more trash pickup or we need to look at bigger trash cans, especially for the bigger events. I walked Main Street one night. Every trash can was full with trash on the street around it. So that's something I don't want to see anymore. Street sweeping, we do it. Maybe we need to increase the schedule there to try to keep Main Street as clean as possible. Historic preservation, I think we need to be extremely diligent about maintaining the historic preservation of the buildings downtown. I think we've done a good job of no chains on Main. I like the CUP idea. I think we need to make sure we continue that. That's very important to our identity on Main Street. And police presence. We have two bicycle officers. I'd love to see walking officers, especially during the weekends. I think walking the sidewalks brings another element of not necessarily supervision, but you can see them better and people will notice them. And I think it'll create a good thing for the city. And I've talked about this with Clinton several times, but ultimately I'd like to see a Main Street department, just like we have vegetation management, just like we have streets. But I'd like to see a Main Street department that would manage a lot of these things. And the other thing is I'd like to have our Main Street designation completed this year if possible. It's surprising that Fredericksburg is known for its Main Street and we don't have a designation. We should have been the first town in Texas to have it. So I think that needs to be completed. Transportation projects, we need to look at those and really pursue one or two projects this year. And finally, my machine will work here. There we go. I do have two. City employees, and I've had this on my list for numerous years. That's our number one asset. We need to continue to have competitive wages and benefits so that we can attract and maintain the top qualified people. By having the top qualified people, keeping them happy and doing their jobs properly, it's great for the city, and we need to make sure that we provide competitive wages and benefits, as well as the proper and up-to-date equipment for them to do their job. Whether it's street department, whether it's city staff, city hall city staff, we need to have the proper and updated equipment. And the last thing is young families. Parks, either public or private. I like what we've done with several locations. And then also to encourage young families to get more involved. I think we're starting to see that, but this is going to be their town. This is their town today, but they need to be more involved. We need to have younger people up here on city council. We need to have younger people in boards and commissions and involved in things. I know they're got jobs, young families, but we really need to start encouraging young families to get more involved. That's all I have.
That's a lot to get done in a year. I think I'll go a little shorter than that. I like Turner Hall and the Ham property. I think those are very important. Main Street is always important. I like the idea of your strategic plan. I think it's important. And I've been part of some strategic plans that were too pie in the sky and not realistic. So I would urge you to try to keep it to something that's doable. Plenty for me.
Speaking from experience.
I'd be first next year. Last, looking at everybody's and say, with diddle. Certainly the law enforcement and EMS is top priority, always has been. And from that point, I'm also looking at that some way or another. We've talked about this for a few years. Maybe Lisa can help this year. But that we need to see about getting some hot tax money for the EMS and the fire department or the police department. I was in town a weekend. Everybody knows there's people everywhere. We increase our population on weekends, and we should get some support instead of having our locals. They've got the water. The water rationing will continue. Certainly the new well we're adding to it, my understanding, it will be an emergency well. It won't be used in with the current one. Is that right?
But no, it'll be used along with the other two. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And now the one you're thinking about is probably the well out of that Big Ranch that we use very sparingly.
Okay.
Yep.
And we're talking about sports complex. We know that that's been up and the bond was denied. I don't know if it's possible just to do a portion instead of a big grand bond and look at maybe putting in one or two parks fields at a time to add to it. I worked T-ball the other night and, you know, there's a lot of people at those things. And we use two fields at T-ball.
Absolutely. Any more new fields we can get, even if it's phased in and we do one at a time and then another one, we would take. So
can you talk just a little bit about naming any names
or
what's been, you know, happening in terms of development of that site?
So I've discussed and met with several people involved with the local Little League Association, and they're wanting to do something similar what the soccer association did. They want to do a public-private partnership where they'll go out and they'll find funding to support building the facility. And then we would provide the property for them to do that. So they are working on that right now with hopes that maybe we can get this moving here in the next few months to a year. But we definitely need new fields. 15 years ago, we had zero select teams, or 10 years ago, we had zero select teams or travel teams. We have 15 or more now, plus T-ball's exploded, Little League's exploded. We do not have enough fields to get all these kids on it. And I can speak from personal experience. My girls play on the Little League in Harper, and we wanted to play the other Harper team, and I was trying to get a field for one night during Little League season, and we couldn't do it. So I couldn't get a field for my own girls to play here in Harper, paying for them and everything. We couldn't make it happen. There weren't enough fields.
So, Andrew, the public-private approach, just like the soccer field,
yes,
correct me, please, was it's city property. We maintain it. We irrigate it. They do everything else.
So, close. So we provided the property, and they built the facility. They actually handle the watering, the maintenance of the fields themselves. We take care of the bathrooms, the garbage. We do make repairs to irrigation and lights. And in the parking lot, but everything inside the fence, so the aerating, the fertilizing, the mowing, all of that is done by the soccer association.
Okay,
which is good for us.
That's a great approach. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The final one I really have is, y'all know my affiliation with the hospital for years. We don't have an urgent care in this town that goes past 8 to 5. You have to run to Kerrville or you go to the emergency room. And I don't know, but my experience in life in emergency rooms is not good. But I really think that the community, the city, the county needs to encourage somebody to come in and provide us with urgent care. I've made calls to Methodist. They want to be called back. So,
Cliff, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So, Tony, we have spoke to a urgent care facility. We have talked to them as part of the DRC process. So realistically, I think there may be one coming in the very near future. We expect that that could go to PNZ for that approval within the next couple months.
So is it private or public? Public. I mean, or 501c?
No, it's privately owned, but it is a 24-hour urgent care.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Read your mind, Tony.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for going through this. Just quickly, I jotted down some of the items that two or more of you had in common on this list. POT, that was one of them, expanded use of POT. Water, I think, is a top priority. Transportation infrastructure. City-owned property, including Turner Hall, the Ham property. Main Street initiatives. So as we have, did you get those, Sean?
Yes, sir.
So as we go through this exercise every year, we see a lot of these things continue to be on the list. Bobby just mentioned it regarding Main Street initiatives. We've been talking about, you know, what to do with the Ham property and other properties. Although it's maybe a little bit, too ambitious to consider completing all of the things that you have listed. I looked back through the list from last year, and we've actually either completed a lot of those items or they're in progress right now. So from my perspective, the problem is keeping these priorities on the surface, having a unified vision and executing on those priorities through the budget process every year. And Gary, that's exactly what I'm talking about when it comes to a strategic plan. So Sean, when you finish, I want you to go to the next slide. I've given this presentation in the past, starting back in 2023, and I heard the same thing. You know, this is just another plan that's going to sit on the shelf and collect dust. Well, it's not just another plan that's going to sit on the shelf and collect dust. It's a plan that will be updated starting with this meeting by the council every single year. And I think that's the difference. You know, I mentioned the comprehensive plan. Although we're pursuing a few items in the comprehensive plan, I fear that it may be collecting dust before long. You know, it's a document that the entire community participated in. A lot of staff time went into that, a lot of dollars. The council was involved, a number of people. There is a task list at the end of that comprehensive plan that's 65 items long. Can anyone remember one of those tasks? Anyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sidewalks.
Okay, what else? Anyone else?
Well, they talked about possibility of an annexation and growth in the community.
Okay, so there are 65 other ones that we don't have at the forefront of our mind. Is anyone intimately familiar with our 2017 water wastewater reclaim water master plan? Has anyone read through that? Our transportation master plan. Have you had that in front of you and looked at it? Our visioning 2018?
I have a copy in my office if you'd like to see it.
Okay, well, how about anyone else? How long has it been since you've read through that? Our Parks Master Plan. Okay, that is the idea behind this plan. So when I sat down this morning, I don't know if he's still here, Lynn Bizzle walked into my office. You know, Lynn is a keep it simple kind of guy, and I like to do that when I can. Sitting in my office, I took 9 complex slides explaining how I want to work through this. I reduced that down to 9 words on one slide. to try to describe what we're trying to accomplish here with the strategic plan. So it starts with a vision from the council. I will show you the vision on the next slide from the comprehensive plan. There it is. Back up one more. Back up again. Guiding principles. It's two slides in advance of this slide from our comprehensive plan. We relate everything that we do to the guiding principles that are in the comprehensive plan. It's on every agenda, every item is related back, you know, to these guiding principles. Here they are, right here. And we'll talk about them a little bit more here in just a minute. You could back up. How do those relate? How does that vision and those goals and those guiding principles relate to the goals, that the community goals that you set? And how do we execute on those? This document provides one place where you can go in a very organized way, and you can look at the city's capital improvement plan. Our capital improvement plan is a 20-year plan that includes projects, it includes large equipment, it includes different initiatives that are part of the budget process every single year. A lot of the capital improvement plan is supported by master plans, all of the public works master plans, the park master plan, the comprehensive plan. All those projects are included in that capital improvement plan. And although we do a pretty good job executing on that capital improvement plan, it doesn't necessarily relate back to the council's goals all the time. This organizes all of those master plans in one place, along with vision that the council has and your community goals that are updated every single year. We're going to do this every single year, this time of the year. Update your vision, update your goals. To offer consistency when we have a change in council, we have two council members whose goals are quite different than the two that were on council before. So how do we maintain that consistency moving forward? I think it's with this organizational document. That's all it is. Everything's in one place. So it adds that consistency. You determine what projects we need to do moving forward. Some of them are master plans. Some of them are infrastructure related and have to be done. But Main Street initiatives is an example, you know, of one. It might stay on the list. It might fall off the list, but plugging that in so that future councils can see those priorities. We have that consistency year to year. Tracking these projects and initiatives, if they're plugged into the CIP, finance is working on a way to track those very specifically through the software, the budget software that we have. Finance staff has been hard at work on this, building what I'm calling the back end of this document, relating the budget back to these specific projects and tasks, tracking these, getting back to reporting this information to the council, maybe if not on a monthly basis, every other month, every quarter, providing a direct report back to the council regarding progress on these items that started with your goals and your vision for the community that translated into projects that are supported by the budget. We want you and everyone in the audience to know, in the community to know exactly where we are on project A, B, and C. And then at the end of the year, we start all over again. So every single year, we go through this exercise and it's updated. So this is a living plan. It's not a plan that's on a shelf. It's not anything that gets stagnant. It's something that we refresh every single year. And it's just a way for us to better track internally. It's a way for council to have that input right up front. It's a way to be consistent. It's a way for the community to understand what we're doing. Here's the plan, and it includes every single master plan that we've done. Applies to projects that we have on this long capital improvement plan list. It includes all of the projects, all the tasks in the comprehensive plan. this is what I would like to do. Doing it on the back end, we would like for council to have input on the front end, which you started doing today. Simply put it together and move forward to provide that consistency year to year, to be completely transparent with the community, better track our progress, to see where we're spending our money on the things that are a priority for you and the community. That's all it is. Ernie does a good job of this. And it's very similar to the way I would like to do it. But I'd like to have just a work session talking about this item and this item alone. To give you a better idea of how I'd like to move through this. If you could go to the next slide again, these are just a couple of items. This is out of our comprehensive plan. This is the vision for Fredericksburg. Again, your vision may be a little bit different. This was based on community input, staff input, council input. You can take a look at that later and get a much better feel for exactly what all that involves. But I think this captures the essence of everything that we do. If you'll move on, again, these are the seven guiding principles that are included in the comprehensive plan, starting with neighborhood quality, workforce, tourism. Tourism is a very important part of who we are and what we do. We rely on tourism a lot. There has to be a balance between tourism and community, but tourism, city center, when we talk about Main Street, when we talk about historic preservation, that's what we're talking about. Mobility. We talked a lot about transportation, trails and sidewalks. That's what we're talking about. Small town sensitive growth. Every council that I have been involved with since I've moved here 13 years ago has had small town sensitive growth in the forefront of their mind. You know, y'all have all protected Fredericksburg from this, you know, just massive out of control growth. I know our EDC plays a big part in that. You know, we all work together, small town sensitive growth. And finally, governance. Those are the guiding principles in the comprehensive plan that we would like to be the basis for guiding the strategic plan. So next slide. So this is just a list of all of the different planning documents from 2013, actually through 2026. We will add to this list at the end of this year our long-term water supply plan. We will have an update to our water, wastewater, reclaimed water master plan. We will have our unified development code that will be added to this. But just to give you an idea, this is a lot of work. It's a lot of information. If you, for instance, want to learn more about the Cherry Street Extension Project, you can go to a list of projects. You will be able to go to that list of projects in the strategic plan, probably click on a link, and it will take you directly to the Transportation Master Plan section of that document that has to do with that project. So this is very interactive. It's very easy to use. We're working on all of that on the back end, right? But this is a list of everything that we've done, you know, over the past decade or so. A lot of information all in one place. All projects that are listed are supported by master plans or your goals and vision. Yes, sir.
Number four, during council session December last year, that was not going to be included as a reference. I would state for the record, the final product didn't look like the work that a lot of the residents did, but that having been said, are you at least going to reference that? I see it up there, but...
I added it initially. Okay. I added it back in. For discussion, I think that it's a lot of good information. It might not be biased in the best way, but
it was 7 months of time by our residents. It was not paid consultants. So,
right.
Are there chinks in the armor? Yeah, I'll give you that, but I think it's important to pay respects to the folks that put a lot of time into that.
I think there's a lot of valid information.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It came right from the community. Now, you know, different council members may feel differently about that particular effort. And I think we've addressed a lot of the items that have come, you know, that are included in that document in other ways. But, you know, that's also for a continued discussion.
And it's just a reference. It's nothing more than that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So next slide. That is the end of it. So again, I wanted to keep that very high level, you know, and pretty simple. Think of this plan as just a, you know, an organizational document in one place. It helps us stay organized. It's all plugged in directly into our financial management software. It's a way to track these things, apply your goals and your community priorities to the things that we're doing, those things back to you, and just have a continuous cycle every single budget year where, you know, we're taking a look at this ever-changing landscape, you know, of priorities, and just making sure that we're consistent council to council to council, knocking these things off the list. That's all it is. And we're moving forward on the back end just to help us. But we strongly recommend getting council involved at the beginning of the year and applying your community goals to this.
We've talked about this, and I think this is very important to put all this under one umbrella. Helps us create a target, because if we don't establish a target, we never know if we hit the mark. So I think this is very important work to do.
Yes, sir. I couldn't agree more.
Let me ask you a question. Does anybody need to take a break, a short 5-minute break?
Please.
Yeah. Okay, 5 minutes, please.
Glenn, are we going to get a copy of all these documents at the end of this meeting?
Yes, sir. And we all have all of them in a location that you have access to.
Hope me, wait.
You can provide a hard copy or email.
So 10:13, we'll recess for 5 minutes. 10:21, I'll call us back into session on what you expect tourism to do. So, Ms. Krishna, I think you have the floor.
So I can read this.
If I could open up this one too. Ahead of Krista. You know, when we finally get to the nuts and bolts, the finance department always grounds us in reality. We have these big dreams and that, right? Doing all these great things. Is there any way of changing that? Dollars and cents is what it's all about, right? So this is actually a presentation, most of which Krista gave to our department directors during our regular Monday morning meeting last week. And since this presentation, we've also had a meeting with all of the general fund departments together, talking about their budget needs. The general fund departments, I don't mean to leave anyone out if I do, includes development services, IT, the health department, the larger departments. In public works, we have the street department, the parks department, the fire department, the police department. Who did I leave out? Health department, did I mention health department?
Yeah.
Portions of admin and court. Thank you, Evan, you were there. And I can tell you that even in that meeting, you know, the needs of the organization far exceed our resources to fund all of those things. So we'll continue to work on you know, the budget as that was the starting point. But this is reality right here. And what we've tried to do, Chris has done a great job. We've tried to put together a presentation that will give you a, you know, very broad overview of our current financial situation, what we look like, some of the limitations, with a number of different takeaways. You know, this presentation is intended to provide you with some information that you can have in the back of your mind as we proceed through the budget process this year. And I'll also say, and you'll probably hear this again, that although some parts of this might not look really good, as a city financially, we're doing very well in terms of property values, in terms of our sales tax, in terms of the debt that we have as an organization, especially compared to a lot of cities around us. When you look at the situation that a lot of cities are in, it's nowhere near the situation that we're in. We're in a very good position. So with that, unless I've left something out, Chris just got, again, a very informative presentation here. And please stop us at any time if you have any questions.
Great. Thanks, Clinton. And I'll be sure to send this PowerPoint presentation to everyone so you can take a look at it after the meeting as well. All right, let's go ahead and get started. So today I'll be covering general fund and enterprise financial trends. We'll look at property tax and sales tax, and then just a little bit reminder about our city-county shared expenses. And as Clint said, if you have any questions as we go through it, just bring them up as you have them. That's also on my screen so I can see it a little bit. I know, I apologize. I tried to get the numbers as large as I could for everybody, but you can only fit so much on one slide. So this first slide is the general fund revenue versus expenditures. We went back 5 years, back to 2022, just to look at our revenues and our expenditures and what that five-year growth has looked like. And again, this is just general fund. So in 5 years, we've had a 26% growth in revenues. We've had a 42% growth in personnel, maintenance and operations, 31%, and then intercompany, 25%, which is our in lieu, and then intergovernmental transfer out, 65% increase. So what I try to do when we're going through budget is look at our recurring revenues and our recurring expenditures. Because I know that Mayor Briley and I have had discussions about, you know, budgeting deficit and budgeting you know, profits. And what it is sometimes you can go into a deficit because of one-time capital costs. But we want to make sure we don't ever go into a deficit when we're looking at just recurring revenues and recurring expenditures. So we're looking at revenues of about $27 million and then recurring expenses at about $24 million currently. The takeaway from this is clearly you can see that our expenses are growing faster than our revenues currently. And then the other thing is 60% of our recurring expenses are personnel.
And if I could just pause there, you know, when we look at everything from equipment to materials to paying employees, and it's not just here in Fredericksburg, it affects everyone across the state. We're impacted by those things. I would say that inflation is driving up cost faster than our revenues as are increasing.
This is just a graphic for what you saw with the numbers in a bar graph. And the reason why 2024 expenses are so high there is because of the purchase of the new City Hall in 2024. Okay, so what is driving the gap between our revenues and expenditures? Well, if you look at our property tax revenue over the last 5 years, it has grown $3.7 million, but our personnel expenses have grown $4.2 million. And you know, 65% of general fund revenues make up sales tax and property tax. And our sales tax has been pretty consistent and it's been doing well. As you can see, we were at $8.7 million in 2022. And we budgeted about $9.3 million this year, and I do expect to hit that number. We have another slide a little bit later on sales tax. So we're very reliant on property tax and sales tax, because if you look at some of our departments, for example, the police department budget is over $9 million. So they're being subsidized by the sales tax and property tax. They don't bring in nearly $9 million in revenue and not even $300,000 in revenue, to be honest. Okay, now we're going to look a little bit deeper into personnel, since that is our largest driver of our expenses. So this is just looking back from 22 through 26, the personnel growth, and then also what that means as far as dollars. And then also over to the far right, you'll see the 2026 total expenses, which total $27.6 million. So for looking down the percentage of growth, it looks like municipal court, you know, they've grown 177%. Well, that's actually a growth of $438,000. And then staffing, with that number of personnel growth, we have added 38 total positions for the city, with 21 positions of those being in the general fund. And then Chief Warhauer did want me to point out that on his six new personnel, those are not all sworn officers.
Miss, I'm just looking at the percentage. That's over that 2022-2026 time frame.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, so the percentages can you know, health added one employee. So just by adding one employee, their budget went up 86%. Okay, so this is just a bar graph with our recurring expenditures are the dark green, and the orange at the top is our non-recurring expenditures, like our one-time capital. And then that blue line is our revenue through 22, starting in 22, going through 28. So of course, 27 and 28 are forecast. And my assumption that I used for 27 and 28 was to start with our 26 numbers and then add 5% revenue and 3% expenses. Because with our revenues not keeping up with our expenses, we need to slow down our expense growth while we can allow revenue to hopefully catch up. So the the current forecast for 2026, including capital and debt, we're looking at a $1.3 million loss for general fund. That's the budget. And that's taking out, based off of the conversations that I've heard, that's taking out the $531,000 of revenue that we had budgeted for leaf pickup.
How did you have $531,000 leaf pickup? Prorated.
That's what we budgeted for 26. It's included in the budget that we had agreed on when we adopted the budget. But then since then, we've, I think, talked about not including it going forward.
Well, what I'm questioning, I thought it was $10 a month. That'd be $120 per person.
Right. So that's where that's coming up from.
Yeah, we prorated it. We didn't start it until January.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on to enterprise fund. And what I noticed when I built this slide is their personnel is actually the same percentage growth as general fund. So with the added staffing, 17 positions, they've also, enterprise has also grown 42% in personnel costs. Their recurring expenditures are growing slower than general fund at 20%. And then their revenue growth is 17%. So again, enterprise, just like general fund, not as big of a gap, but enterprise is growing expenses faster than revenue as well. Now, enterprise has a little bit more control though, because we can raise rates and we're looking at doing that. So we should be able to keep, you know, pace with our expenses by making adjustments to our utility building.
The reoccurring expenses, I'm sorry, just a quick reoccurring expenses, 20% increase is attributed to what?
Mainly personnel.
Personnel. Can you name the enterprise funds?
So the enterprise funds start at the top. We've got electric and the water and stormwater and sanitation and golf is included in there. And also tourism is included in the enterprise funds.
EMS.
Oh, an EMS, yes. Thank you.
So when we talk about personnel growth, just public works as an example, when we have subdivisions that are constructed, we have new streets that have to be maintained, utilities, other city infrastructure. We hire individuals in the department to handle these increased maintenance needs primarily. The electric department, we've kept that number of staff, you know, relatively the same over the years. Sanitation is up and down just a little bit. But as the city grows, we need more personnel to maintain that infrastructure. When we have more calls, as we're seeing in EMS, the trend up that we talked about in monthly calls, annual calls, we need more personnel to handle that. So those enterprise funds, as Krista mentioned, we have a little bit more control over rates that support those departments. So as we grow, well, those rates just a little bit to cover this.
Okay, so I basically built the same graph as we saw for general fund with the same format. The green is the recurring expenditures, the orange is the non-recurring, and then that revenue line at the top. And then forecasting 27 and 28. I also, just for forecast purposes, added in the 5% revenue and 3% growth in expenses. And then as you can see there, we are budgeting a $5.5 million loss for enterprise, but that is mainly because of capital projects. It's not recurring expenditures that's throwing us into that position. Water department has over $5 million in capital projects. Electric is almost $2 million in sanitation too, with cells 12 and 13 expenses being in there.
So that $5.5 million loss is cyclical based on capital projects. This is where you and I talked about deficit spending. So this is part of that upcycle of investing.
Yes, sir. All right. Now we're going to talk about property tax, and I know this one is really difficult to read, But I'll just go ahead and go through some of the numbers on there. So it's just showing our rate back in 2016 was a total tax rate of about 24 cents. And then over, you know, up until 2025, 26 fiscal year, now we're at about 23 cents. And as you can tell, the property values have gone up. We were back at about $1.7 billion back in 2016, and we're currently running around $4.3 billion. And taxable values this year look flat from what I'm getting from our from the tax appraisals office. And also construction is down 59% compared to last year. So that 59% equates to about $275,000 lost revenue for us. And then I've got a note down there, 1% change on the tax rate is $350,000. And then if we have a change in taxable value, it affects us 1% of $80,000.
So one penny change on the tax rate?
One penny change is $350,000.
So that reoccurring revenue from new construction starts, you're saying, has typically been about $250,000 roughly. You're saying that's now jeopardy or gone, or
for this next tax year, it's reduced. It's actually, last year was kind of high, so but it's even down from 2023. So it's down over the last 3 years. This year looks the lowest in construction. Okay. New property.
I get a clip here to weigh in on this just a little bit, but we've typically averaged, I would say, between 80 and 100 million in new construction. The year last year, we saw a pretty big spike. I think it was 214 million in total new construction, a lot of subdivisions we had. What else came on?
Well, several years ago, the hospital. That's a two-year cycle. Next year, you know, the Muse will be coming online. So those big projects, the big commercial projects, have a big impact on that number.
So the, I think they corrected me, it's in Moisa. So I was corrected on Muse, but that doesn't open the doors until Q4 of next year.
That's what they're talking about. I believe until
we would receive a prorated percentage of whatever that value is in Q4.
Correct.
So it's not really a big bump.
Yeah.
Right. It's usually in January when they look at those values.
Yes,
so not.
You're going to see a couple year gap. Usually it takes time for the improvement value to get on the boards, and then you got a whole tax year, and then it jumps on. Usually it's about 3 years. You'll see that.
Right. We do have another subdivision that's under construction off of Pica right now. Looking back at Tim, I know we've talked about a couple of different apartment complexes.
One hotel under construction.
The apartment complexes, we have a 300 something and a 200 something unit.
Yeah, but they probably won't break ground until later this year. So,
right. You know, so
it'll be ways out.
We have a number of things in the pipeline okay. that will likely get us back to that average number, probably plus or minus.
We're going to have a dip in 27.
Yeah, but last year we had an unusually high year.
This is just another look at the property tax history based off. We have our current rate, which our current rate generates $8.9 million in revenue, with part of that going to our debt. But our debt rate is very low. About $1 million of that goes to debt with that 0.026 debt rate. And then maintenance and operation is the remainder part of the tax rate calculation at 0.201. And just a reminder, we did adopt the voter approval rate for this current fiscal year. Yes. This is just a tax rate comparison. And on this slide, we are showing the average home value. Fredericksburg at $536,000. Comparing Bernie, Kerrville, Liberty Hill, and Marble Falls. And you'll see, it's really hard to see this, but you can see our debt rate compared to other cities' debt rates. Marble Falls is 30 cents. So that's higher than our total tax rate combined. questions on this one? This is just showing on your tax dollars where every dollar of your property tax is going. So just a reminder that the city of Fredericksburg receives about 18 cents of every dollar. And then 61 cents goes to schools, 21 cents to county, and then small, less than 1 cent for the underground water conservation district.
And of course, we don't have the citizens that are the people, it's the schools and the county. We're a smaller population.
Yes, that's right. So as I stated, we did adopt the voter approval tax rate for 26. So I just want to remind everyone that when we're looking at the voter approval tax rate, that's where the 3.5% cap comes in. So you take your prior year no new revenue M&O rate, and then you can multiply it times the 3.5% cap, and that will come up with your new rate. And then also you'd have your debt rate on top of that. So just estimating, then this is early. I'm not confident, I'm not 100% confident this is how it's going to look, but we would be looking at around 20, 23 cents for the new voter approval rate when it comes out, just as my estimate. The no new revenue rate is calculates the same rate that you would produce from the same amount of taxes as the prior year. And those rates don't come out from the appraisal's office until the end of July. So we're still quite ahead of that.
So Krista, because valuations are flat, in some cases down, so we're starting off with a little bit of a hole that we have to dig out, correct?
Right.
Stay net neutral.
Normally, if the rates, if the valuations go down, then no new revenue rate will come up. But since it's kind of flat, I don't think we're going to be looking at the rate going up that much.
Okay, so we're not digging out.
No, we'll be about flat. I would say flat. Okay, and then sales tax. It's been doing very well. As I stated earlier, we collected about $9 million in 2023, and we're looking at collecting about hopefully $9.3 million in 2026. I did add Tim's latest figure in there. So we're sitting currently at $7.2 million on our $9.3 million budget. So in sales tax, we always talk about it. I mean, it's our largest contributor to general fund revenue, but it is also scary that it is that high of a percentage because we're relying on our tourism dollars to be coming in and people spending money here. So if, you know, so that if something would change, then that number could start slipping down.
Tim, is it too early to look in your crystal ball and tell us what next year will be?
let me preface by saying three or four months ago, I had no confidence you were going to even come close to meeting this year's budget. The last three reporting months, that will be February, March, and April, have been outstanding and have completely turned y'all's, fiscal budget year around. I think I advocated budgeting flat last year, and I think y'all ended up budgeting 3%, and you're going to come close to getting there. Just be conversative. I'm not saying you have to be flat, but I think 3% again would be awfully aggressive.
Thank you.
Okay. So when we talk about our intergovernmental expenses, we're going and talking about the county shared expenses. So I just wanted to remind everyone that these are all this year's budget numbers. But so we split expenses with the county, and we also pay for half of the county's rural fire department, the communication and dispatch, the animal shelter. The city pretty much pays for the animal shelter. The county contributes $15,000 currently. And then other general fund expenses is, of course, for the city share of the appraisals, the appraisal district and the GCAT system. So next steps, departments are working within OpenGov, building their budgets, looking at their forecasts and, you know, their budgets for 2027. We're going to be meeting with the departments. Staff will be meeting with the departments in late June. We're going to have meetings the week of the, well, starting on the 24th of June, the 24th through the 30th. And then in early July, we'll be working on refining those budgets and preparing the draft, which is due in mid-July. And then we have a budget workshop currently scheduled for July 14th in the morning. And then we have a joint city council commissioner budget workshop in the afternoon on the 14th. That's all I've got for today. Any questions?
Very nice.
Of those other cities, how many of them have more sales tax than property tax?
That's a good question. You know, I haven't compared their sales tax, but I know that Kerrville, Marble Falls probably.
No, I'm talking about
the ratio.
It's Kerrville.
Oh, the percentage.
Get more sales tax than property tax.
Correct. I think we're probably I would imagine that we're the only ones that have a higher sales tax.
We're a unicorn. Right. We can make that comparison.
Yeah, that's helpful.
That's good.
General note.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is item 2.4, which is discussing high level action on leaf brush and pickup. So I'll just open up the conversation. This was something that I think the mayor asked the council to bring forward, so it did not come from city staff. I call properly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I had concerns as a citizen that
we need to move to take it off the table. Okay.
Thank you. Oh, I apologize.
That's right. Motion to remove brush pickup from the table.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, so continuing the conversation. My concern as a citizen was setting a precedence that if we are establishing a fee for a service that is already covered, in my opinion, under existing ad valorem property taxes, that was my concern. So we set a precedence, and it's easier to install another fee at some point in time. So I was not in favor. I said that as a citizen, and my opinion has not changed. So open up for a conversation. I know there's some good thought and good rationale behind it. So I'd like to have that conversation.
I'm for it. I don't think $12. I think $12 is not this what we budgeted, Chris.
$10.
$10. Okay. I'm sorry. I might be a little bit too steep. I've never used it as much as I have until the spring, all the leaves and streams. And I see just driving around town, lots and lots of limbs and leaves now. And as Bobby has said, and I'll let him continue, it keeps our town looking beautiful. And I think it's kind of a social contract that we're all in this together.
Thank you.
I would agree with Todd, and I was for it to begin with. I'm still for it. I don't know if $10 is the right amount, but I think it's a service that if we get into a tight budget crunch, it's one service that we would consider removing. And I don't think it's good for the community if we remove this service because of one, it provides a service, but it also I don't think people would enjoy Fredericksburg if we didn't pick up brush and leaf. And I think it's important, and we need to pay for it.
So I agree it's important, but I don't think the conversation here is abandoning the service. You correct me if I'm wrong, someone please, but that would still be covered. Is that correct?
But it's been, so why not?
That would be, when you talk about the operation, there's a cost associated with that, and that includes, you know, the time, equipment that's used to perform the operation. Although that may be covered in the budget, it's not specifically broken out. So, you know, if you were looking at, you know, trying to accomplish a budget savings and looking at all of your operations, this may be one of those locations that you would look first in terms of cutting something out to, you know, cut costs. I'll just leave it at that. Chris, I don't know if you want to add anything, you know, to what I just said. You know, explain that a little bit differently, or Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a shared cost, a shared cost. You know, the street department is in the general fund. They do the bulk of the leaf pickup. That's not a year-round item. So that's a fall and a spring time. You know, it's about 4 months total over the whole year. So, you know, that's certainly a portion of the fee that we're looking at. So
if a person pays someone, hires somebody to commercially take down those leaves and brush, aren't they supposed to take it off the property?
They are, yes, sir.
So you're only talking about people who do their own. And then when I pull up my tomato bushes, I have to take them behind the recycle center. I can't put them on that. There's only certain things. Only limbs that can go on the curb, not everything.
That's correct. Rose bushes, anything with thorns, briars, you know, anything with vines, essentially, we don't want.
Lawn clippings go
behind the recycling center. You can bring it out to the landfill.
So we're talking about part of something. And commercial people are supposed to haul them all out.
That's correct. Yeah. Now, I mean, I will say there are folks that we don't see in the act. I think most people, most commercial landscapers and tree service folks, they understand that. They know it's in there. On occasion, we do pick up some material that is trimmed, you know, from a tree service, but usually they're smaller piles. Or we'll send a crew out to just pick that up with rubber tire loaders rather than the brush clipping crew. And there is a fee associated with that.
I like to blow all the stuff on the trees. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's never good.
So Chris, what does a leaf pickup unit cost?
So yeah, when we did the calculations, that cost is about $2.50 per month.
What does that piece of equipment cost
to purchase it?
Let's see. We figured an annual cost for the leaf loader of just under $83,000. So it's about 350, I think.
Okay, and we have two of those currently.
We have two of those. Yeah. You know, during the fall is really the really busy time. You know, and it typically happens right around Thanksgiving, I feel like, when we have our first freeze and, you know, we have a lot of calls that come in. So we send multiple pieces of equipment out. You'll see loaders and dump trucks even trying to help get ahead. Short week, everybody wants their least picked up before the holiday weekend. Calculate labor, equipment, personnel. Everything as far as leaf itself is about $2.50 per month. When we look at all of our customers, which is about just under 6,000 total. So again, that's just for residents. We don't do that for commercial businesses. If they're in, you know, 87 North or something, a real busy area, we do pick those up, but again, according to the ordinance, those commercial folks, if they're not a refuge customer of ours, they're supposed to haul that off themselves.
So that's the leaf side. You have the equipment and the operation that takes about 4 months to complete, about, you know, $2.50 up to $10 would be just the leaf. The remainder of that, which is a service we provide every single week along with trash pickup, done by a enterprise fund department, makes up the remainder of that.
Yeah, it's just under $8 total. When you look at 2.5 people per year, and we say a half a person because we have a three-man rotation, the equipment associated with the chipper and the crew, the truck that we pulled the chipper with.
So we'll have to replace the equipment at some point. And you know, that is a cost that we could cut. Just a long answer to your question.
I understand there's a cost and there's implication of personnel and equipment and M&O and all that. But I think my position is we've already funded that and continue to fund that.
And to answer your question, Mayor, we do not plan to discontinue the service. Okay. Whether this fee happens or not, this is one of the services that we probably get the most compliments. It's unique to Fredericksburg, I would say, but we get a lot of positive compliments on the service that's provided. So I do not plan to discontinue that, whatever y'all's decision is.
And I would continue to look at funding and increasing as necessary through the more property tax approach. That's how I would look at it. So any further conversation or discussion? So I want to be clear, buddy, if you can keep us straight here. If I ask for a motion, then a motion to approve would be to accept the fee, and to deny would be to reject the fee. Is that right? To make sure that having been said, I'll accept a motion.
Make a motion to deny leaf and brush pickup.
Second.
Motion to deny and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All in opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Motion to deny is accepted, so it is rejected. Thank you. Okay, so
can I make a motion? So we just denied the $10 fee.
Right.
Right. So I'd like to make a motion to initiate a $5.
Second.
Motion to accept a $5 fee. First and second, and all in favor?
Aye.
In favor, all opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Motion fails. Two. Thank you. I don't see any other agenda items on here. So, city manager, are there additional business?
Not for me.
Any further conversation? Any additional business? Thank you, everyone. I call this meeting adjourned. It is 10:59. Thank you.